What's up, everybody? How you doing? You're tuned in to another episode of Living Life Intently. I'm your host, Lee Frazier, and we are back after a two-week hiatus. A lot has been happening in Nova Scotia, so we just decided to stay silent on all of our social channels, give the podcast a break, and just let Nova Scotia heal for the next 2 weeks and try to wrap our brains around what happened on top of the pandemic with everything that happened in Portapique and outside Halifax. It has been a crazy few weeks, to say the least. But we are back with another podcast, and this one is a pretty neat one. This one came about because we brought in Reese Waters, who is the guy that I'm chatting to in this podcast. We brought him in to consult on our documentary film that I've been talking about relentlessly on this podcast and on social media. We just released a teaser. We've got a release date, which is coming out. We're going to release the full film next Friday. That's May 8th. So mark that in your calendar. But this project has been a long, long time coming. We started over a year ago. We filmed all last summer. We toured around the Cabot Trail visiting all these operators to see what it's like during a summer season here in Cape Breton, behind the scenes, behind the curtain of in the tourism sector, more specifically the adventure tourism space. We did tons of hikes, tons of hanging out, hitting beaches, swimming, kayaking, paddleboarding, tubing. We hit a lot of challenges with weather. We crashed some drones. So it has been a wild ride over the last year and a lot of work to put this thing together. And the original plan for release was to do a tour where we would do a screening, we would do a concert with Cape Breton artists, and we kind of bring Cape Breton to each location and kind of showcase the island and what we have to offer here and really promote it. But with the current climate, with COVID-19 and the pandemic and everything being shut down and the uncertainty of the tourism season here in Cape Breton Island, we decided to change the scope of this project and turn it into more of a kind of a little bit of a fundraiser for the local companies. Now, what we are doing is next Friday, we'll release it as a stream. You can pay to stream it. It'll be up on Vimeo. We'll have links everywhere, all over social channels, through our mailing list, through everywhere. So it'll be up. You pay to stream it. But in return for paying it, you'll be getting a booklet with up to somewhere around $200 worth of savings to each operator. The six operators focused on in this film, featured in this film. That's myself, Live Life Intense, Cape Breton West Paddle Boards, A Great Day Fishing, Highland Bow and Arrow, The Highlands Hostel, and North River Kayak Tours. So each one of us has got anything from 25% off accommodations to buy one, get one free, to buy two, get one night stay free, all kinds of stuff. So it's a great amount of savings for those of you that want to save on your summer activities once things open up here. So that's next Friday, May 8th. To be released full film. If you want to check out the teaser, it's on all of our social channels. It's a little 30-second teaser. The trailer is due to come out tomorrow, and then all week we'll be sharing some photos and some behind the scenes stories from these drone crashes, the hikes, the challenges of putting this film together and all that sort of stuff. But we are going to get back into what this podcast is actually about. This podcast is, like I said, Reese Waters. Reese used to work for BBC. He's done work for Austin Martin. He runs a podcasting production company outside Halifax and is originally from Wales, but has moved to Nova Scotia, I think he said 2 years ago, with his wife and kids. And has been loving it, man. And he came in to consult on our documentary and kind of help us make a strategy to finish the project. And we chatted everything about how he got his start in the creative industry, creative roadblocks, lots and lots of great stuff. I will say that the audio is kind of shit because we were dealing with a lot of lag. I tried to fix it as best as I could, and I had a hiccup on my end and deleted my nice recording. So it almost, well, basically sounds like I'm calling him for a podcast on his channels. But anyways, I'm not going to blabber on too much longer. This is Living Life Intently with Reese Waters, and enjoy.
I'm in rural Cape Breton. This has been like a bone of contention with locals here for years and years and years and years about the shitty Wi-Fi. And I know that I was at a town meeting, or not like community meeting, when they were discussing it, I think with one of, I forget who, if it was a local MLA. Anyways, they basically said that Bell came out and, or whoever has the Center of the Towers are basically saying it wasn't worth their money to put it down here. So we weren't going to get fiber optic for a while, but so I'm just dealing with.
Unless the government forces them, it's not going to happen, I guess.
No, it's shit. And we just got cell service down here in some spots, which is awesome. And I really enjoy that, that freedom when you don't have the phone and don't have service. People freak out, but I actually enjoy it. So no one can get a hold of you. You're not.
Yeah, it's a good thing. It's nice to have a rest.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, it's funny when you see people that aren't from here that come down in the summertime and they're not used to the shitty service. They're used to having service all the time, especially if they come from like Toronto or like, you know, overseas in some big urban area or the States where you literally have Wi-Fi everywhere. So they come here and they're not used to not having it and they don't know what to do. They're very awkward. So
I guess they're used to having like 4G and 5G and all these kind of like super fast services, like just like in their homes streaming films without even using a Wi-Fi connection. And then you go somewhere where you can barely read an email or send a text message, and they're just disconnected from that whole world. Is a good thing. I think the world, the day that you can get internet anywhere in the world over Wi-Fi will be a sad day, I think. So,
yeah, it's good to detach. That's the thing, and that's what I'm finding now with a lot of stuff that we've been doing, and people just want to have that separation. And it takes, there's a little bit of a learning curve to it too. There's a little bit of like the initial anxiety of not having your phone attached to anything and connected to anybody. And then once you get over that, then it's completely fine and people learn and they enjoy doing it. And I think there's more of a emotion towards detaching from the online community than ever before right now. That's essentially what I'm seeing, but I live and hang out with a bunch of lunatics that enjoy doing that stuff. Anyways, they hate being connected to things. So, but it's a downside of my business, man. That's how I market it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the thing is that, I think that's one of the charms of somewhere like Cape Breton, for instance, is that, you have that escape, you can go there escape, and you've got, survivalists and people who live off grid and these really colorful characters, people who are just choosing to live life differently from what is expected. And yeah, it's awesome that you can celebrate that.
Yeah. Yeah, man. It's fucking awesome. I enjoy doing it. Like we were, I guess we'll do a little bit of an intro for you too. So for people listening, and I apologize for never introducing anybody. It's Reese, right? I'm pronouncing it correctly. It's Reese.
Yes. Reese. Yeah.
Yes. So.
It's like the pieces.
Yeah. Like the Reese's pieces. Correct. There we go. Easy peasy. So, Reese we brought in to look over a project that we're working on, this documentary that I keep talking about that people are probably wondering whether or not it's actually going to come to fruition. But let me tell you, it's like just finished the first rough edit of the whole film together. So it's coming out in the next couple of weeks. But we brought Reese in and he's worked with BBC. Why don't you just, I'm going to butcher this intro. So why don't you just give like a brief overview of just who you are and how we met?
Yeah. 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 So my background, my film degree, I studied in film school. The topic was documentary film and television. And I did it because I really liked the course, but I really wanted to make comedy. So my whole career has been making kind of funny documentary or comedy that has got a more of an improv documentary feel to it. And that's what I did with the BBC for about 10, 11 years before I moved to Canada, was making kind of, warm, funny, people character driven documentary topics. I did a show called Rod Gilbert's Work Experience, which is just on, I think you call it, season 9 is just being launched. I kind of finished, I worked on there for season 1 to season 8, and it was great. We built a really good audience, and we get a couple of million views every week, and it was a really fun show to work on for a long period of time. And it was one of those things, you're sad to leave, but I, you know, me and my wife and our kids, we wanted this big adventure in Canada. And then I've done like radio and podcasting, and I've done also commercial work. I used to make some mini documentaries for Aston Martin, the car company, and it's a real mixture of stuff. But I'm in Canada now, in Halifax, Nova Scotia, and doing I've got a post-production company. We do finishing called Outpost East, and I've also got a podcast company called Podstarter, and we help people launch and develop and create new podcasts.
Excellent, man. Crazy. So what I there's a few questions there, but what firstly, what made you guys decide to move to Nova Scotia out of all the places in Canada?
Do you know what, we actually, like, we'd already been, like, me and my wife, we got married in Banff, and we'd like kind of driven across Western Canada on this kind of like really cool adventure road trip after our wedding, and all the way over to Vancouver. So we kind of, that was in our minds, that's the only part of Canada we've been to. So we started, when we decided to come to Canada, it was like we wanted to do something really drastic with our lives and go somewhere that was fun and exciting. And before our kids got too old and they wouldn't want to move, we got three sons. They were all under six at the time. So we were like, now is a good time to do it. It's a bit mad to move with three young children, but if we didn't do it, if we didn't kind of take the leap, we were worried that they'd hate us for taking them to a new country otherwise. We were looking around and we just kind of, before we started looking, I didn't really even register that Nova Scotia was a part of Canada, and I didn't really know much about the east coast of Canada at all. And then we looked at it, and then I came over on my own just to like look to meet some people and see if it was like a viable place to get a job or start a business. And I just really loved it because we're from Wales. The Celtic vibe is just so laid back. There's no nonsense. Everyone's so friendly. You can always have a good time regardless of whether you're in a pub or somebody's kitchen or wherever you are. It's kind of just a real warmth to it. And it felt really familiar and different at the same time. It was new to us, new to explore, new and exciting. And the province was beautiful. And this whole part of Canada, Atlantic Canada, is just, I think, is one of the best kept secrets in the world in terms of somewhere where you can go, have an amazing quality of life. And also there's a ton of opportunity here. We realized this was the only part of Canada we could imagine moving to and having that adventure that we kind of imagined in our heads. Been 2 years.
Kind of crazy.
Last Friday was officially 2 years since we moved here, and it's been fantastic.
Yeah. Wow. 2 years, man. Oh man. Yeah. That's kind of like a common sentiment between, you know, a lot of people. And I think, it's funny because it's a lot of people that I meet that have that sentiment are not even from here. I mean, of course there are people here with that sentiment, but I've met so many people that are from away that moved here because of exactly those reasons. And most people from, more specifically say from where I grew up, were trying to leave the province because they thought there was no opportunity here. And it's kind of like a weird, it's like all the people that were from here were moving away and all the people from away were moving here, because they saw the opportunity. But people here were just, I think, so caught up in their own bubble that they didn't really understand. And this is coming from my perspective, because I grew up here, and here's a very small town, and a lot of people don't get the ability to travel, or I don't know if they don't have the ability, but they just don't travel internationally, and they don't see how things work in other places, which then inspires you to do different things and see what might be a potential where you live, because what might be done and as a business in, fuck, say, you know, Wales might be, it might be saturated there. But when you look here, you're like, fuck, it's the same idea here. So I could bring that inspiration here and be successful. But if you're still, you know, living in your own little bubble here in Atlantic Canada, and you never get out and see that and see different cultures and see different things, you don't really know what could be possible here. And that's kind of, honestly, that's kind of how we started as a business, is because I traveled all my 20s, worked overseas and worked offshore, and I would backpack and do all this stuff. And I would see how it was like, especially hostels, and how the backpacking community is in Europe and South America. And I'm like, wow, we have the ability of doing that in Cape Breton, but nobody is doing it right now. So I moved back and saw a huge opportunity in doing it. And, you know, 3-4 years later, now we're you know, we're still growing and still expanding and doing a million different things, and let's create more opportunity. So it's kind of wild, man. It's pretty crazy whenever I hear that from somebody that isn't originally from here, that's moved here because of the opportunity. And then my buddies down the road are like, oh, there's nothing to do here. So they have to keep working the same job all the time. So it's pretty hilarious.
I think yourself, you've moved away, and then it's made you appreciate your like place of where you grew up in a different way, and you see it in a different way because you've kind of stepped out of that that environment and you've come back again. And I think that sometimes, you know, if you never leave, you don't realize what is around you, what's in front of you, because it's so normal to you. It's just there is scenery that has always been there, and it's hard to see those opportunities. And I kind of feel like I'm taking chances on opportunities and approaching things completely differently than if I had never left Wales, if I was still there, because everything is slightly different to me and new, and you kind of move to a new place, you get to redefine who you are, and you get to kind of like craft like this whole new life, essentially. And I think that, yeah, sometimes it's just that having a different perspective on where you are can really change you as a person, but in a positive way. Usually I think if you thrive in that change, then you kind of either go somewhere new or return home with a bunch of new ideas, and you never look back. You're never the same, really.
Yeah, well, I think, and a lot of people are afraid of change as well. They're afraid of the uncertainty of what they don't know, and I find that, I mean, you see that a lot, like a lot, especially on, and this might be the algorithms that I have on fucking Instagram and all social media, but I see a lot of these videos and podcasts that are marketed, and that's what essentially the majority of all of them are trying to do. And all these like self-help books that have been coming out, like a lot of them that I've seen in the last like couple of years, has been all about trying to switch it up and change up your life to grow as a person and push your boundaries, which is kind of something that came second nature to people, friends of mine that we all grew up together. We all just pushed each other's boundaries, and in that sense would be like doing physical stuff that we didn't know that we could actually do, but we went and pushed each other to do them. And then in the end, you realize where your barriers are at and where you can push yourself as an individual. And that thought has also applied to like even this project that we brought you in to look over the documentary. Like I had no fucking idea how to shoot a documentary. I just had an idea, and probably without that history of growing up here and doing all that shit and pushing my boundaries and pushing, being uncomfortable and dealing with all that stuff and just constantly trying to push through it, I probably would never have done it. But you know, this is a year later, and I've been sitting here for fucking 2 weeks just fine tuning things and trying to get things in line, and you know, in the end, we have a full length film, which a year ago didn't happen. It was only because of an idea I had in like Christmas. And I'm like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to make one. So, you know, that's kind of how it should happen.
And that for the first time you do that, the first time. Yeah. Yeah. And like, I always remember the first like 30 minute TV show I made was the hardest thing I've ever done, because I'd never done it before. But then like the one I did after and the one I did after and the one I did after, you kind of, it becomes second nature. You become familiar to the process, and then you become better at it. You see, you know, what you did, you could have done better, and what you kind of like learned from it, and the things you're good at, and where you might want to get other people in to help you on other areas. And it is a thing that the first time you do something new and out of your comfort zone is the hardest, but then you just keep going at it and keep going at it. It's kind of like when you fall off your bike as a kid and like your parents just make you get back on and keep going. Cause like if you feel like you failed and you just use that trauma to define that experience, then you'll never get back on again. So, you know, it is that those new experiences, they're exhausting and fun. And, you know, in by their very nature, they push your limits so far, but at the end of it, you've really achieved something and done something that, maybe people never thought they might do, or that they had the ambition to, but kind of had, you know, were held back or never saw the opportunity. But if you make those opportunities just to try it, like there's nothing can stop you from doing it or trying. It can just be psychological, those barriers. And yeah. It's like your documentary is awesome. I know, considering it's your first documentary, is great. I really like it. You've got some really good characters, and is really warm and human and funny. And I mean, I've only seen bits of it. Like, I haven't seen the cut that you've assembled or anything. But from what you showed me in those scenes, I just really, what you really nailed was like getting really candid, honest stuff with people. It's not stuffy or kind of like it doesn't feel overly constructed. There's just loads of natural fun kind of moments there that can really like just really can be hard to capture.
Yeah,
but the that kind of authenticity really shows in it.
Yeah, it's and what's been difficult about it has been, you know, one, the process in doing it, not knowing what you're supposed to do and what you could do in the planning and shooting stages to make it easier for you in the end, doing like the post-production work. But it's been weaving the story, the narrative together. And it's just the same process as applied to when I have a history and I've been into DJing and producing dance music since I was like fucking 13 years old. And that's why I have the studio in my house. And in the last couple of years, I haven't done much of it, but the same process for applies to, you know, doing this film. Cause everybody, especially for me, is I'm more of a perfectionist and I'd like to have everything perfect. But things will never be perfect. That's the thing I got to keep in my mind. So for instance, last 3 days I've been working on the final, like 5 minutes because I've been playing around with, you know, clips like, little narration clips that I'd like to hear at this point, but I don't know if that music that I used in this section would be better at the final 30 seconds or, you know, that sort of stuff. And I want to have the right vibe, but in the end, you just have to kind of like commit to doing something and have a final product and then have a look at it and then look at it in a different perspective. So instead of looking at it in this makeshift editing suite that I put together, you know, last night I rendered the whole edit out and watched it this first thing this morning with a fresh set of eyes, but watched it upstairs in my big TV in like, so I had a whole different setting to see if on whole that project made any sense whatsoever. So it's been a fun little process and like, but it's also like the history of like making music and what I really did for like a solid 2 or 3 years was try to find ways through creative roadblocks and how you can get in peak, like almost flow state, like full focus state on what you want to do. And as far as music goes, music that applies when you're just in a full focus mode and you're not letting any outside influences. So thinking about, you know, the song or the sound that you want to make that somebody else had in their track, well, being in full focus mode, you're not even thinking about that. You're just kind of going where everything's taking you. Which sounds take you one direction and like a drum sound might take you over here. And, you know, you just kind of like follow that process and work. And in 4 hours, you might have a finalized track. But I really take that process and that thought process and how to break through creative barriers into this whole creative process. And the same deal goes with, you know, anything that we do as a business. It's just kind of like you apply those skills to all these different areas. The parameters change a bit, but it's been fun, man, overall. But I mean, when you're going through a project, I'm sure you deal with creative roadblocks quite often, I would imagine.
Yeah. I think like one of the hardest things I always find is that I always want to make something that is kind of as original as possible, or as kind of doesn't seem like is directly copying something that is currently popular. And then I get really paranoid about like, am I subconsciously being influenced by things that I've seen and things that I'm watching, and just go in this like weird place where I'm kind of not sure if what I'm doing is just repeating what I've seen rather than me actually following that process of trying to be original. And I often hit roadblocks because of that kind of thought process. And then also there's times when you've got some footage and you remember it differently in your head. You remember this scene as being like, I remember like, wow, when we were filming it, we were laughing, we had tears in our eyes, it was so funny. And then you look at it back on the footage and you realize that that emotion wasn't actually captured in that little square frame on the camera, and that it doesn't have any of that resonance that you imagined it did. So then you're like, do I need to try and work on this scene to make it feel like it did? Or do I just need to let go and move on and just accept that it wasn't as funny as I thought it was at the time? Because it was just maybe it was just mild hysteria that we had and we were just a bit being silly. You know? So there's so many like creative roadblocks that you do hit and moments where you kind of question everything and question your own ability as well sometimes. But often is it like you did, you kind of like you walk away and you come back to it and you look at it differently. Or sometimes the hardest thing is showing someone the work or sharing that work with someone who you know will give you an honest opinion or isn't afraid of saying things with criticism, which sitting there and watching it with that person can be quite quite exhilarating, because you kind of like, they don't care about my feelings. Like they're going to give me honest feedback. So when I'd like make a TV show and we'd sit down and watch it in the same room as like a BBC exec, I was not watching the screen, I was watching their face, seeing if they would laugh or smile, where I was cutting it, and as a team, we were like hoping and writing narrative that would make people laugh. And were they reacting the way that we were designing the show to have people react? And that was always kind of, I always remember, like, you know, I'd be a bit sweaty after that. It would be kind of quite nerve wracking, but that would always be the kind of, time where, you know, but usually that feedback is when you do get that, it just makes you better at making things when you have that honest feedback, when you have that criticism, because if somebody does laugh and they feel no expectation to do so, you know you're doing something right. And at the same time, if they give you something that you don't like, it makes you realize that you need to think about it. You know, maybe it's just their opinion, maybe it's subjective, and maybe you are right and they're not right, but you have to open your mind to the possibility that you have to rethink things completely and take that opinion into consideration. So I think that sometimes those roadblocks can you can overcome them internally, but sometimes having an external opinion come in can also give you new perspective, even if it's uncomfortable and you end up sweating. So
it's what I've been finding recently, because in the last couple of years I've been really involved with the creative industry in Nova Scotia, as far as like the, and not the music side, which I was involved in, but the more like film and photography side. And what I've found is that, you know, and this might be the same as music, but people are so afraid of honest opinions. And a lot of people don't, the people that I've interacted with, it's like, if you give a negative or not negative constructive, opinion of their work, it's kind of like the end of the world, and people don't really know how to take it, is what I've been finding. Now, I don't know if that's a generational thing, because, or, you know, being raised in a certain climate, because when I, you know, where I grew up, it was like you dealt with negative criticism all the time. And that's all that there, this is like pre like cell phones and pre everything. And, you know, even working with, like the way I work and the way I work is if I'm pissed off, if something's bothering me, I don't wait to tell you that you're pissing me off or that you're not meeting expectations on a certain project. And people take it a little bit differently now than they were in, you know, the industry that I worked off offshore. Like offshore, no one gives a fuck about your feelings. If you're not pulling your weight, they're going to tell you you're pulling your weight. And if you're not pulling your weight, you're losing your job. That's it. So when I come into this creative world, a lot of people's feelings get hurt a lot more. I've been finding that, because I give honest critiques and I expect people to give me honest critiques. And one of the biggest things that the biggest responses that I've had was, you know, I don't want to offend you or hurt your feelings. And then my immediate response is literally like, don't give a fuck about my feelings. Like, just tell me what you think of this. Like, that's the only way that I'm going to be able to make this, whatever it is, better. Like, as far as, and that can be applied to this film, it could be applied to video, it could be audio. Like, I use that predominantly in my business, as far as like critiquing how our service is. And we send out emails with would it be like anonymous kind of like report card almost. So people can do it anonymously. And that's the only way that we can grow as a business and offer a better service, is by knowing what the fuck is wrong, what people really think about things. And yeah, just this current climate, people are really afraid to like give their honest opinions about things because they don't want to offend people. But that's really, honestly, the only way people can grow as like professionally and personally and emotionally is by dealing with all that sort of stuff. And that's been a big learning curve for me switching industries because people take it. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I think it's a fine line between, on one hand, you want to nurture, inspire, and support other people who are making creative work. And on the other hand, you want to give them advice that will allow them to improve that work. And that everyone is different and how they interpret that can be like, you know, it can go from, thank you very much, you've given me something to really improve what I'm doing, or it can be, you're a troll, you're just attacking my work, go make some, you know, it's a really hard thing to navigate. And my wife has always been a real compass for me on things, because she would look at my work on TV and she would say, and especially because it's comedy and it's so subjective, what is funny to some people is unfunny to others, or is only a little bit funny to other people. And she would watch it and she'd go, oh, I really enjoyed that, I laughed all the way through. Or she would go, I didn't laugh at that one. That one wasn't as good. It wasn't for me. So, you know, when you've got someone in your life like that, it reminds you that, like, you know, people's opinions change and vary and you can't please everyone. And that, you know, her honesty was really useful, because family, or some people in my family, would always tell me that everything I did was amazing, which is not what I needed to hear, because they were just being nice. They were my family. They were being supportive. You know, you need those people around you who are going to criticize you, who are going to challenge you, that are going to push you to do better. But also that they're doing it from the right place. And there's times when I've received criticism where I can tell that it's from a helpful place, and there's times I've received criticism and I can tell that it's coming from a negative place. It's more of an opportunity to attack. Personally, that can be hard to navigate, because you want to listen to criticism and use it to improve your work. But the motivation behind that criticism is an important factor as to whether you should listen to it or not, I suppose. So.
Yeah. Oh yeah, 100%, for sure. But yeah, I've had that was like the biggest thing with this, like doing this podcast, was kind of like when we started, I keep saying we, I'm just so used to saying we with the business. But yeah, when I started this was more, I was very inspired. So I was very interested in talking, and not to say that I wasn't interested in talking to a lot of people, but there was a fine line between, you know, doing something that I really, or interviewing or talking to somebody that I really wanted to get some information and some pointers away from them. Because that was essentially the way that this started, was me to, one, have cool conversations with cool people, but also have takeaways out of this. And I think sometimes when I'm doing them and I'm thinking, I'm just kind of like lining up interviews or conversations to have content going rather than having specific takeaways from it. And there's been some podcasts that I haven't even put out because it's not, there's no specific takeaways from that conversation. There's nothing that somebody listening can't, you know, go, hey, that was really informative, I really like that one because that gave me a different perspective on approaching a certain topic or whatever, or something, learn something they didn't know. So that's also been kind of like how growing this podcast and asking other people to listen to it and critiquing them. And I'm like, don't worry about it. But that's the only way that we could grow this thing and make it a better medium for people that are listening to it and, you know, grow this thing further. But I mean, I guess on that topic, one of the questions that I wanted to ask you was, like, in your opinion, with having the experience producing podcasts, like what are kind of like some of the key elements that would go into like successful podcasts that you've been a part of, or that, I mean, really your opinion on like key elements that go into a successful podcast. That's kind of like one of the things I'd like to ask.
I think the golden rule, and I don't think anyone should sit down and make a podcast unless this element is there, is passion for the thing that you're talking about. Because if you're going to talk for a few hours, or you're going to give time every week or every month to put something out that you're going to talk about or facilitate conversations on, and you haven't got endless energy for that topic, you will run out of steam quickly. But also, there's something kind of magnetic about speaking to someone who really cares about what they're talking about. So like the best history podcasts or learning about topics you were never interested in. If you've got someone you've been listening to who you really engage with as exciting and, you know, really, really caring and knowing about what they're talking about, you're willing to go wherever they want to take you because you click with them and you feel drawn to that kind of enthusiasm that they have. So I think that is the main ingredient that successful podcasts have, is that the primary person behind the microphone is the one who kind of cares the most about being there. And then the other element is just, yeah, just being aware of who you're talking to and who you would like to speak to, because unless you can see an audience out there, or unless you can imagine the kind of person who would listen to the show, sometimes you can get a bit lost because you try and speak to everyone, and you can really build a good audience in a niche, for instance. Like if you're really into a specific topic, yeah, then you can really build that niche, or at least just go. You don't even have to like go into the realm of, oh, I'm going to analyze these demographics and my listeners are males between the age of 27 and 29 or whatever you're going to do, and they eat this food and they drive these cars. It could just be a personality type. Like I'm talking to people like myself, or I'm talking, this is just for people in my town. You know, it's always just good to have that passion, and then also to just consciously be aware of that connection to who you imagine might be listening. I think those are the two really important elements that sometimes get overlooked by some podcasts. And there's no real limit. There's no rules. You know, the thing I love about podcasting is that you don't need anyone's permissions. There are no rules. There's no kind of set formats or set way of doing things. You're the kind of in total control of every single creative element from day one.
Yeah.
And sometimes people don't maximize that. They don't kind of go, well, how can I do this differently? How can I push this creatively and put together something that is no one's ever heard before? I think sometimes people assume that podcasting is a particular format or a particular style of show, and like discovering those shows where people are just doing mind-blowing things with audio or narrative and storytelling or creativity or like, you know, documentary or undercover stuff, there's still a huge amount of creative potential that hasn't even begun to be kind of, that we haven't really scratched the surface of where people can take podcasts yet. I think it's kind of just blossoming at the moment, but I'm really excited to see what kind of work gets produced over the next 10 years, really.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been a ride for me listening to them. So I think I probably only started like 3 or 4 years ago when I got back from working, and I ended up moving back home from Halifax, left Bedford, my place at time Bedford, and moved home. And that's when we started this, but I was heavily listening to all kinds of different ones and audiobooks and all that sort of stuff, because it was an easy way for me. I'm kind of weird in the sense that when I had headphones on, and say I'm working, when I was working on this house, when I have headphones on, I'm in like, that gets me in like a peak flow state where I'm just full focus and I'm listening and I'm focused on working. But if I don't have that audio playing in my ears, then I don't get full focus on things. It's really, really odd. That's one thing I've noticed from working on this house. So I think like when I work with other people on construction projects, I just have headphones in and I know what I'm doing and I just put my head down and I work. And I think everybody thinks that I'm antisocial when I'm working with them, but it's just a way that I focus. So that's kind of how I got into listening to them. And it's been, you know, trying out all kinds of different ones. Like there's been some really good ones. Like the Serial was one of the first ones that I really listened to. And then of course, you know, everybody gets into the Joe Rogan one. And then that was kind of opened my eyes to all kinds of other ones and comedy ones. And it's kind of like a wide spectrum of things. And it's my go-to thing when I'm working. And if I can get away working, if I'm working on anything, design work, website work, working outside, gardening work, anything, it's just in my ears and you're constantly learning. That's the biggest thing that I enjoy about ebooks, podcasts, all that sort of stuff is the fact that you could be doing two or three things and optimizing your time and trying to be as productive as humanly possible. You could be learning history on a certain topic, like Dan Carlin's hardcore history podcasts are fucking epic. They're long, 6-hour individual podcasts, and like they'd be like 4 or 5 of them on a certain topic. So you've got like a full week's work of listening, but at the same time you're learning, you're also completing tasks. So for me, it would be working on my house, or building my business, or working on a business plan, or, you know, doing whatever. You're doing multitasking. So you're getting things done and learning at the same time, which is awesome. That's kind of a big thing for me, is how best you can optimize your time and use time wisely and manage it wisely to be as productive as humanly possible. Because there's nothing worse than sitting around. If I sit around for like an hour or two, I get restless and I'm like, okay, I'm not being productive, so I get to do something. So very rarely do I literally sit down and watch, but sometimes I will sit down and watch like a whole binge watch for a whole day and binge watch a series. And, but then like the next day I'm back at doing some shit and trying to get done. But yeah, that's been a big part of my life over the last couple of years, is listening to podcasts. So, and I think when you were in looking at the edit from Doc, you were mentioning to me, and I totally forgot about that right to now, was to get, this streamed on up on uploaded to YouTube. And that was kind of like a thing that I was going to ask you as well, was kind of like, when right now I'm using Anchor, right, to get this podcast out, because it was just easy for me to do the distribution that way. I didn't have to fill up my Dropbox with another program that I use. I didn't have to manually submit all these outlets. It was just easy. Upload, it's done. But as far as like getting your podcast out there on different platforms and promoting it, like what are, like when you guys are setting up through your Podstarter company, when you're kind of like in development of a podcast, what are kind of like the starters, the go-tos that you guys suggest other people to do to kind of like get the word of their podcast out?
I think like what you find is that a lot of people already have like a good social media presence, and it can be a case of like what is the best way to bridge like your podcast audience and the social media audience, to get them to kind of, you know, people to jump both ways. And I think that like one really useful tool is Headliner. I don't know if you ever used the app before, but you essentially go to the website is headliner.app, and you can download it, and you can just create video versions of your podcast. So you can do the full episode with the, like it animates the waveform as the audio as people are talking. And also you can select this option where it just sends you, it just selects a clip of audio and it sends it to you. Like every day it'll send you a new clip. And then you can just plug it on your social media. I think that's one of the best tools. The other element of Headliner is like you can then just create a YouTube channel with all those videos. So I launched, for a while now I've been trying to, since I came to Canada, I haven't done any comedy work. It's been much more commercial advertising or corporate work. So I've been itching to do a comedy project. And I finally bit the bullet and launched a show called Canadian Politics is Boring, which is a new podcast where I'm trying to learn about Canadian politics by teaching my friend who hates politics in general. Even though he's from Canada, he knows nothing about it. So I'm only one lesson ahead of him, kind of thing. So every episode, I teach him an element of Canadian politics that is way more exciting than weird and kind of bizarre than people would imagine Canadian politics to be. And one of the strategies I really wanted to do was use the podcast on the traditional podcast platform, but also build the YouTube presence. And the show's been going like just over 2 weeks, and the downloads are going well on the kind of on the podcast side of things, but we've had like, I don't know, 10 times as much traction on YouTube as a video channel, for instance. So it's a platform. YouTube is like the second largest search engine in the world, and your ability to kind of put a lot of tags and keywords in your description of the videos on your YouTube channel means that discoverability is a lot higher. So we did an episode about Manitoba. So, you know, there's not a huge amount of podcast content about Manitoba, but it's trending quite well. It's getting some good views because when people search Manitoba and history and, you know, politics or whatever, it seems to be the video pops up, which wouldn't have happened as easily with the podcast so much. And the other element is transcription. So if you get your episodes transcribed, you can post them as blog posts, for instance, or put them on your website as a page. And then all those keywords about all the topics you're talking about will then become discoverable through like Google SEO. So if you're talking about an obscure person or a town, and when searches that, then they direct it to your site. So you might have, oh, it's a blog post. Oh, no, wait, it's also a podcast. I'll click the link. I can subscribe. So it's kind of like extracting as much of the information from there as possible to kind of create. And you can get, there's some great transcription services. There's a lot of people who offer that service online. Headliner does transcription with AI. It can be okay. Sometimes it can get quite bad. The AI-based services like Headliner or Temi is another one. They can be okay, but if you've got a strong accent or sometimes they get the words horribly wrong. And there's some really funny examples. I always screenshot it when they really butcher what people are trying to say just because sometimes it can be quite funny. But and it's always nice to pay a human to do something. I'm sure there's, like, for instance, you probably find someone in Cape Breton who's doing transcriptions from home, and you can send the work that way. So I think like doing that can sometimes completely transform who will find your podcast and how they can discover it in a completely new way in that sense. Because even though like most people are listening to podcasts these days, I think in Canada, like it is over 50%, it's getting closer to 60%. There's still a huge chunk of the population who don't listen. And if you kind of meet them where they are, if they use Facebook or if they use like YouTube, or if they're just happy to listen to a podcast on a website through their laptop, then make sure they can listen. Don't try and meet people where they want to be and where they feel comfortable. Maybe you're the show that introduces them to podcasts, but you might need to lead them in a particular way first through a platform they're comfortable with. And like Facebook, you can upload those videos on YouTube to Facebook too. You can house all those videos there as well. It opens it out. Once you do create a video version, there's almost an endless amount of potential for where you can put it.
Wow. Yeah, man, there's so many different things that go into the whole process too. It's wild. It would become daunting to people that if you're creating one on the creating end and you didn't know the whole process. For me, for doing the audio stuff, it just became second nature because I knew the whole process behind it and I had experienced marketing. But if you're just jumping in this game and you're just wanting to start a podcast and you don't know any of this shit. Wow. I understand now why, it becomes stressful to some people. Now I'm kind of like, I should, it's right in front of me the whole time, but now I'm just kind of thinking about it more and all these other avenues to help, bring it to the public. It becomes crazy. It's just time consuming. But like I said back before, it's like trying to optimize the time. The Headliner app is one that I was using. Yeah. And I did do a couple full length videos for YouTube with it. Did you say that you could automatically upload it straight to YouTube from Headliner, or do you have to download it and then upload it?
I think you can. It gives you an option to share. I tend to download it and then I kind of like store it on my computer and release it from a different date. But you can literally share directly to social media from there as well. So there's tons of options with it. I think there's another one called Tunes to Tubes, which you basically just upload an MP3 and it just publishes it straight to YouTube as well. So there are a lot of different services and ways of doing it. Loads of choice, and Headliner, a lot of them are free as well. So you don't necessarily have to. I think that's the good thing about podcasting, is that there are tons of free tools out there just to get started. You don't need to go down that route of how much is this going to cost me. You can get started with barely anything and just explore and test and be creative in that sense.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's wild, because when I was starting out doing music and getting into this world, there's a lot of money to get into things, because you had to, back then it wasn't a lot of free software. So it was a lot of hardware and especially DJing and stuff. Back then was turntables and clunky gear and vinyl and money to spend and all this sort of shit. But now everything is pretty much at your fingertips. I think you can get free software to learn how to DJ and all that sort of shit. So it's it's crazy. It's then created, it's taken away all of that, you know, upfront investment and time to learn in the sense of DJing was like learn how to mix on vinyl and learn how to play records and that sort of stuff. And it's kind of eliminated that. And it's created a bigger area to get creative with things and get creative with the whole process. It takes, you know, it just basically, it's essentially like streamlining the entire process. So you don't have all that other shit to deal with. You can just go directly into creating and having fun and getting it out there. And then once you start getting rolling, then you can invest into better products and better services, you know, to kind of bring your whatever to the next level. So it's been interesting to see that evolution because, you know, people that are starting now are really starting with everything at their fingertips rather than back in the day when I was growing up, it was like literally like the weird dial up internet, the beep, 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 like that sort of shit was like, that was internet growing up. And like, you, I had to go,
those were the days.
Yeah. I had to go out to my dad's office to use it and learn how to DJ through a VHS tape that came with the turntables that showed you how to DJ and like weird shit like that. But now it's like YouTube's there. So you can learn fucking anything. You'll learn how to like fix a car and rebuild an engine on YouTube, but it's wild, man. Wild. But how, as far as like, when you're starting these projects, right? So when you're doing this comedy podcast you wanted to do or and anything that's on your end, like what is your process from starting the idea, like the birth of the idea to kind of like implementing the project? Like, do you have a certain specific process that you've worked through over the years that you kind of follow?
I guess sometimes it's kind of like, it works both ways. I have like a bunch of ideas in my head where I'm trying to like go, this is like a show I'd really like to make. This is something that would be cool. I think this would be a fun project. And then on the other hand, there's a whole other pot of ideas in my head that are, these are opportunities. There's a gap in the market for this, or that, you know, no one's ever done that before, or no one's done that this way in this genre, for instance. So I kind of have those two things, and then sometimes they match up, and you go, yes, I've got to do this. So, like Canadian Politics is Boring was one of those. I wanted to do a comedy project. I'm interested in learning about politics in Canada because I was a bit of a comedy geek in the UK, but I know nothing about the politics here in my new country. And then I realized that there was very little comedy or satire about politics in Canadian podcasting. It was mainly much more kind of dry reporting or very factual based stuff. So I was like, oh, and that clicked, and that kind of idea spawned from that. And then The Unexplainers, which was probably the biggest podcast I've produced and been part of, you know, that idea was based on on my passion for online kind of weirdness, like conspiracy theories, Bigfoot, aliens, all that kind of fun stuff that I don't really believe, but I find it really entertaining. I love the idea that people kind of craft this alternative understanding of the universe and look for evidence and then use the most absurd stuff to kind of back up their what they're saying. And because it was kind of ramping up, especially now, like the different, you know, people are almost choosing the reality they would like to believe in terms of politics and news and things. That was a big thing in early podcasting. There still are so many podcasts about the paranormal and things. And we wanted to just be the first podcast that was really making fun or celebrating the quirkiness in a kind of, not in a mean way, but in a kind of fun way. And that's what that podcast was all about. It was kind of covering the same stories and cases that other podcasts were covering in a serious way, but we would do it in a funny way. And it was a kind of a road trip format. So there was no studio recording for the podcast. It was all done in a car, walking up the street, cutting into the side of a cliff. It was always interviewing people in their home or where they work, or, you know, out in a forest or wherever was exciting. And then cutting it together is like almost like a miniature kind of radio documentary, and that's how we built that show. And it was kind of quite different from what else was out there at the time. And this like launched in like 2015 with the BBC, and the BBC have just re-released all of the episodes on BBC Sounds as well during the current lockdown. They're kind of they're sharing all the shows that have been out for a while again, and that was a really fun project because it was something I was passionate about, and there was an opportunity, there was a gap in the market, and it just clicked in that sense. So is looking for those opportunities where And I'd been pitching that idea to people for roughly about 8 years, and no one was interested. And then suddenly it just clicked and happened. And I think is kind of being conscious of nurturing good ideas and not giving up on them. Just even if now isn't the right time, 15 years time, it might be the perfect idea and the perfect opportunity to do it. Things might just not be ready at that stage to kind of go forward with. And you can kind of make the most of those opportunities. But I've missed out on some opportunities too, because when I first started working out in TV, I was about 21, 22, and YouTube was pretty new. It was still only been around for a few years. And I was the 12th most subscribed comedian on YouTube. And I literally had like 150 subscribers. So that's how early it was. And I gave up on that channel because I was like, this is fine, but I can't see how I'm going to make more money making TV shows. I'll be able to pay the bills that way. I can't see how I would ever make money off a YouTube channel. And obviously, like, I'd had a really good start really early on that platform. And if I'd stuck with it, it would have been a very completely different story. But I didn't. I kind of gave up on it. And then YouTube exploded, and, you know, the way to make money off it became really obvious within like 2 or 3 years after I'd given up, really. And it was too late.
Crazy. Great. I was looking, I was listening to CBC the other day, and they're talking about the very first video that was ever posted to YouTube by one of the guys that founded it. Was like 600 million, I think 600 million streams or something. It's like a 15-second video if it's called Me at the Zoo or something like that, or A Day at the Zoo or something. It's hilarious. But they played it on the radio. It's just the guy at the zoo with an elephant. And he's like, hey, here's an elephant. And that was it. 600 million views. Fuck, crazy. But wild, man. Yeah, it's wild, man. Exactly. Yeah, the whole timing thing, too, like you mentioned, like that's what people, a lot of people, when they look, a lot of people, when they look at like successful brands or businesses or things that they want to do, a lot of the times forget about the whole timing side of it. So I always use the example of, like, say, for instance, like us as a brand, as Live Life Intense, we launched, my brother and I launched it, and it was just the timing worked out for us to, in a lot of different levels, right? So at the time, I don't know, this is probably before you moved here, a year or two, there was, when Trump was first getting elected, there was a satirical website made by a Cape Breton radio host that was called Cape Breton If Trump Wins. And it was like, kind of like, you know, if Trump wins, you can move to Cape Breton. It was like cheap real estate and like amazing views. And it was just this satirical, funny website that he made, but it ended up going viral globally and caused this crazy influx of interest in the Cape Breton Island. Like, where is that? And the stats and analytics for that year alone, when you're talking to tourism, they're like, there's an asterisk next to the stats because they're like, this is the Trump bump year. Like, we can't use that. Like, that was just something that no one could ever have thought would have, similar to the situation we're in. But that was happening. So there was a lot of light on Cape Breton Island. There was, tourism was on its rise back up. Like, adventure tourism here on the island was really kind of like not non-existent, but almost there, because a lot of businesses had closed because we had such a downward spiral in the tourism industry here for a long time. It was just not as big as what it was. Tourism Nova Scotia also had, they just put out at that time was like their goal of quadrupling revenues, tourism revenues within, like, I think by 2022. Now that might be a little bit hit right now because of the current situation, but what I'm saying is there was a lot of timing involved. And then Instagram and social media was just starting to come on the rise in Atlantic Canada then. And there was more people wanting to get into photography and videography and spending time on the app. And all these little things went into us launching and directly attributed to the success of our brand so far, hands down, because if we would have launched it 5 years prior, it would never have been where it's at right now at all. Like, it probably would have launched it, not had any money coming in or barely any money coming in. And then in a year or two said, you know what, fuck this. I'm going to go back to diving offshore and stuff. But it was just the timing happened. And it worked out for us. And here we are. And, you know, now this is my full-time job. And I kind of like left my old job and I'm just focusing on all of Live Life Intense stuff. And it's crazy. It's crazy how timing works sometimes.
Yeah. No, exactly. And also, like, you look at it from the point of view of like how important timing can be, and if you get it wrong, how disastrous it can be. So, like, you think about the lockdown that everybody's under at the moment, and the shift, yeah. You know, before the lockdown, celebrities on social media were a big deal, and everyone was like, kind of like, oh, what, you know, I really want to see what they're doing today, what normal thing they're doing with their lives that I also do, but is them doing it, so it's important. And it kind of, like, you find that now after the lockdown's happened, they get in, people are kind of angry at them, posting, complaining about living in a mansion and having like acres of land to explore. And you look at like the people now care about the stories of doctors and nurses and people working in supermarkets. And, you know, the timing, it just shifted suddenly where people were like, this is not relevant to me anymore. These are the stories that are important to me. I don't care that you've got, a brand new kind of supercar and what you're doing with it today and the fact you've cleaned it five times this week. That is so off my radar at the moment.
Yeah.
I want to hear about other families. How are they coping? I want to hear, you know, see positive, cool things and dance routines that people are doing at home just to inspire me and pick me up. And you see companies who got it wrong. You know, you look at like the awful shooting that happened the last weekend in Nova Scotia. Yes. And I went on LinkedIn, which is one of the main ways that I promote my business. And I made it, the instant you hear that news, you kind of realize what is appropriate. But I could see a lot of people who kind of pre-program their social media strategy so that things are posted, like they post three things a day, but they're not doing it. It's kind of been scheduled by a service. They scheduled posts were still going out about like, hey, here's how to improve your email marketing strategy. And it just felt so inappropriate because they'd forgotten about the fact that they were like, well, I won't post anything because now is obviously there's more important things happening right now that people, nobody wants to hear about these kind of things that don't seem important right now. But because they didn't have that, they were then posting all of these things that just seemed so insensitive, I think, in that sense, that and people aren't always conscious about how that can come across to people, and sometimes not saying anything is more important than saying putting out kind of content like that.
That's kind of why I've been 100% silent on every social channel for the last, I think, week and a half. It was mostly because I was started focusing on this doc, and then Sunday and all that stuff happened and everything unraveled. And I'm just like, there's no point of posting up about it. And to me personally, I don't like it. It's all dependent on the person and company and business or whatever you want to do. I am not into what they call virtue signaling whatsoever and trying to use my platform. Of course I support people. And of course this everything was bad and it's crazy. And I know one of the people that was, a buddy of mine is a brother-in-law of a friend of mine who I've partied with and met and I've hung out with and I know him personally. He was, one of the guys grazed with a shot, like two shots grazed him, and like a 1 inch either way, it could have been done. And it could have been on the list of the casualties, but so it was close, but I don't feel the need for me to go on social media and post up like support this, support everybody. I just don't. That's my point of view personally. I just don't like doing that. I don't like. I find it's like it is supportive. Like I like to be personal about that sort of stuff. I don't need the world to know. And it's kind of, I look at it like you're trying to say, look at me more. Do you know what I'm getting at that? I kind of like, that's how I see those things. So yeah, I kind of when stuff happens like this, I kind of just am quiet.
Exactly. Exactly. And I really like, the actor Steve Buscemi.
Yeah.
he is my kind of like barometer for volunteer work and charity, because obviously, like you're saying, there's some people who do good deeds, but they make sure that it's shared online to remind people that they did that good deed. But like Steve Buscemi, he's a volunteer firefighter, and I think he was actually when 9/11 happened, he was active as a firefighter, but hardly anybody knows it. There's no pictures about it, or there's very little information about it. He just does it because he feels that is important to him and that he can be of use to people. Now, obviously, like it'd be so easy for someone to make a documentary about that or have him feature that on his Instagram feed and all this kind of thing. But he doesn't, because that's not why he's doing it. He's doing it because he's there for the reason of wanting to be a firefighter volunteer and kind of just do that work and support his community in that way.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's kind of, yeah, I enjoy that aspect of people, but yeah. And that's kind of like the, you know, there's more clutter. Like if I would be active on social media and post up all, but there's more clutter. It's like the focus is not on me as a business. It's not on our company. Like the focus is on so many other people, and let them have a voice and try to get support. Like, you know, I understand that side of it, but that's kind of just my personal opinion. I just do not like the virtue signaling sort of realm, and we are an adventure brand and we like to support our community and support everybody. And I'm doing that behind the scenes. I'm just like, I don't need to tell the public of everything that I'm doing. And then, you know, but then, you know, once stuff starts to start up back again, then we'll start to be more active, but the world doesn't need my account to be posting pictures of adventuring at this current moment. So I'm just kind of focused on doing my own shit. So
yeah, exactly. And I think is it relevant for you to be posting about adventure activities? Like, is that relevant to what the main conversation is and stuff? And I think it, and also I kind of feel like there's an element of just if you've got the ability to not really worry about whether you're sharing every moment of your life online and you can just enjoy it in that moment without getting your phone out, then that can be difficult, because like we moved to the UK, we've got family, you know, in the UK who miss the kids and miss us. And we got in the habit of taking photos of everything we do so we can share it with the WhatsApp groups that we've got with different friends and family back home, or kind of private social media accounts to share like the family activities with. And sometimes it's kind of getting to the point where you go, I'm going to leave my phone in a drawer by the side of the bed today and not carry it around in my pocket in case I need to take a picture of something. It becomes almost like second nature sometimes just to share with someone digitally what you were doing at that point. And it's not necessarily a good thing. I think like historians are going to look back, you know, like a few hundred years, and we're going to be like the most well catalogued generation of humanity that's ever existed. There's gonna be so much information on everyone.
yeah but I mean, yeah, so then that's back to putting your phone away and adventuring and stuff like that. And you spoke on something earlier, and I guess we kind of like wrap it up on this, but the whole, you know, not paying attention to celebrities and non-relevant stuff but what's happening, you know, what's going to happen, and this is what I think, what's going to happen now is the focus is more on the communities and the people within the communities. And I think people are more focused on helping their community out and small businesses out and being a supportive community. And it's kind of this whole crisis, the COVID crisis, has put everything in perspective for people. And and people realize how essential small business are, which is kind of like this next year is going to be, I think, is going to be more of people supporting their communities and people getting out within their own province. I don't think that international travel is going to be open for a while, and it's going to be more or less the local tourism bodies are definitely going to be promoting travel within their own province and within their own country for sure, but mostly within the old province, I think. So the local tourism market is going to go up. And I think once things open up a bit and people get comfortable leaving their house, I know everybody's trying to get the fuck out of there now because everybody's stuck inside. But once the gates kind of start open, it's going to be a big influx of local tourism, people wanting to travel within their own province and explore places that they haven't seen, because for years everybody's been focused on traveling away. And just by traveling within the province, it helps out the local economy and everybody can kind of get through the whole coal downturn and hopefully get through this to the other side. But
yeah, no, I agree. I think as well, like a lot of people are going to support local businesses, restaurants. Like we've been ordering probably way more wine and beer from local breweries and vineyards than we should, but you know, they're doing like door-to-door deliveries and stuff. But it is that, I think there is that people are being rewired to look more immediately in front of them, like what is going on in my community, what small businesses are trying to thrive and survive during this time, and how can the minute that we're all allowed to go out and use those services, I want to get out. I want to kind of, you know, do the things that I miss doing, like sitting in a bar and having a beer or like some nachos, something as simple as that. And I think people then will consciously just go, I'm gonna do that for and support these businesses, not necessarily this chain place or whatever. I think we are seeing like a rewiring where people who are geographically close are going to be way more tightly bound, I think, from this kind of traumatic experience of lockdown and everything that's been going on in people's lives. I think that is amazing how it takes some kind of extreme experience to just make people just really just be aware of each other and care about each other in a way that normal life can sometimes distract you from, and your own immediate concerns can distract you from. And like, I always think about like the things like the Blitz in London during World War II. Like mental health was really apparently like people were really positive about their lives and their neighbors during that time, even though it was horrible and people were getting bombed every night and people, it was so random. The sense of community and the sense of support people felt from those around them was immensely intense. And I don't think that's unique to London during the 40s. I think that's what you would get in any situation in the world where a group of people are sharing an experience together. It just binds them more tightly and they look out for each other more. So yeah, I think you've kind of hit the nail on the head with that. It's going to transform into tourism and, you know, retail and into kind of hospitality in a way that could just be a real internal boom, I guess, for places like Cape Breton and Nova Scotia and everywhere else in Canada, I guess.
Yeah, let's hope, man. So, anyways, well, we'll wrap it up there. Thanks for jumping on. I want to ask you a couple questions after. I'll just do this closing and then I'll just ask you a couple of questions just about that will go on the podcast, but more or less
secret questions.
Give a little outro, tell people how to get a hold of you or find your work online.
Yeah, cool. So if you go to podstarter.io, that's the podcast company. We also have a podcast that is just a learning resource for people who would like to start podcasts from scratch. Outposteast.ca is the post-production company and film company that I've got in downtown Halifax. And also my new show, which I mentioned, is Canadian Politics is Boring. We haven't actually built a website for that because it's so new. But if you search Canadian Politics is Boring in iTunes or in Apple Podcasts, or Spotify or any podcast app, it should come up and you can listen on there. So yeah, those are all my pluggables.
Awesome, man. Well, thanks for coming on.
Cool. Thanks very much.
So I hope you guys enjoyed that podcast. Again, I wanted to say our documentary is out next Friday, May 8th. So head to all of our social channels. We'll have full announcements on there. Follow the story all week as we tell you guys behind the scenes, behind the scenes stories of all the shit that happened last summer during the filming and production of this this documentary. Thanks for Reese for coming in, and I hope you guys really got some takeaways from that, because he had a lot of great information. And sorry again about the audio, that will be figured out soon and we won't be using that same platform, but anyways, thanks so much for tuning in. Visit us at livelifeintense.com, at livelifeintense on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and let us know how you like this podcast by giving it a rating on Apple or wherever you guys get your podcast. Cheers.